Afternoon, everyone. How's it going? Welcome to the session and welcome to the Orlando Convention Center. As you probably figured out, it's quite a walk to get from one location to the other, isn't it? Okay. So how is everyone doing?
Excellent. Oh, you were asking them?
Yeah, I was. Okay. So let's get started with this. Let's see what we got here. How many of you were in the foundational session right before lunch? Okay, that's good. That's perfect. Okay, because that's going to make my life so much easier. Quinton talked about the new world of data. He talked about some of those new features, and he talked about Fantastic 12. So our idea with this session was to take it and say, you know what, let's take these 12 reasons and talk to them as the 12 reasons to love SQL Server 2012. Okay? And we're going to do that in a very, very demo-driven way. I have a couple of guys here with me. We're going to get to introductions soon. My name is Dandy. I'm the technical product manager that also owns the database and BI track at this event. So I'm excited. I'm very happy with the lineup of speakers and the number of sessions that we have. And I really hope that by the end of the week, you're going to look and say, this was a good event. There were so many good quality SQL Server BI sessions, okay? Because I'm accountable for it. Okay? I think I'm also very happy to announce that any external presenter that we have on our track is a Microsoft valued professional. And I've got one of them right here with me. He's been causing me trouble from the beginning. So please welcome Thomas Larocque.
What trouble?
How's it going?
It's going well. What okay. trouble are you talking about?
Okay, let's switch to Sean right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Okay. And we got Sean drinking. Boone as well. Sean, you want to tell people what you do in a day-to-day business?
Sure. I'm a senior lead PM on the reporting services team working on PowerView.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. So this is kind of where the lineup looks like, and because I'm in the middle, because I'm in the middle and the short one in the middle, I get to present more and I get to run more demos than anyone else. So that's kind of nice. I actually measured up for this so I can actually see you guys because I cannot see that side of the room behind this monitor. So
that box is not safe.
Anyways, yeah, we talked about the Fantastic 12 of SQL Server. We talk about blazing fast performance, column store indexing. We talk about security enhancements on how we do contained databases, user-defined server roles. And we had a good talk about required nines and data protections. And in the demo earlier, the foundational session, you kind of looked at that already. I'm going to repeat on that, and we're going to see on what we can actually do with Always On and what are the capabilities that we have there. And then we're going to go into each of those buckets. But that's not how I want you to think. What I really want you to do is look at this entire feature set and additions and components that we have in SQL Server 2012 and see on how they apply to you. When we talk about features like 15,000 partitions, I can imagine a lot of you are never going to think about partitioning their table up to 15,000 partitions. But there's a specific need that allows us to have that amount of partitions. Things like reliable secondaries, contained databases, SQL Server data tools. Where are my developers in the room? Could you raise your hand if you're a developer? Okay. That's quite a huge representation. And how many DBAs do we have? Now, get all closer to each other. Go sit closer, because it's exactly what we're doing with SQL Server data tools. Okay. We want to make the life of the DBAs, the developers, much easier, totally independent of where you're going to be deploying to, whether that's into the cloud, whether that's on-premise, whether that's to a SQL 2008 R2 or a SQL 2008 or SQL 2012, building the structure of your database should be a very familiar and a similar experience. We also added a feature that allowed us to install a SQL Server onto a Windows Server Core installation, which could be huge in terms of virtualization, but also is huge in terms of a minimized memory footprint and a much smaller patching footprint. Now, how many of you did never install SQL Server? Is there anyone in the room that never installed SQL Server?
Couple.
So everyone is quite familiar with the SQL Server installation process, right? Because I see a few hands going up. How long does it take you to install SQL Server? Too long? Okay. It depends, right? It could be quite a while. So First, I want to make a little correction about something I did wrong to my MVP this morning. And you know how these communities work, right? They use Twitter feeds and they go, I asked, I like SQL, that's me, if I could help this morning, and said, yeah, could you go get me some coffee? So I do want to take corrective action on that. I'm actually going to make sure, Thomas, that you get a cup of coffee.
Thank you. Okay?
And that's what it's about, okay? If you think about installing SQL Server, it should go faster than being able to make a cup of coffee, okay? How long would it take you to make a cup of coffee? If you want to make a full pot of coffee, it's going to take you a bit, right? I want my SQL Server installations to go faster, okay? And that's what I'm going to show you. So what I can actually show you if I show you this one, okay? I'm pretty sure my wife will see this recording. I have my universal Java setup, okay? It's also known as a coffee maker. They come in black, they come in red, and many different colors. I'm going to make coffee, and I'm going to kick off that process right now, okay? So press the start button there, as you can see. I'm going to make some coffee here, okay? That thing is on. And hi, everyone. You're actually on camera right now, okay? Then I'm going to switch to this machine. I'm going to talk about installations for a bit. Okay. What I have here is a Windows Server Core, Windows Server 2008.2 installed in Server Core. So I do get a command prompt, and I want to prepare for a SQL Server Server Core installation. So what I can do here is I'm going to go into my scripts. Okay, I've got a couple of scripts there. Let's have a look on what else we have. One of the first things you're going to do if you want to install SQL, you want to make sure the firewall is enabled. Now, it's kind of a tough one doing that on a Server Core installation. So what I did is I have my firewall coming up. Okay. So my firewall is enabled. I'm going to share that script with you. And I'm going to get ready to install SQL. Now, if you install SQL Server, I think most of you installed that using the graphical user interface. But you could totally do that from the command prompt as well. If you install SQL from the command prompt, the way you install it is going to be exactly the same as installing it on Windows Server Core. It's going to be exactly the same experience as installing it on 2008.2. And you could hear the sound of my coffee dripping here, right? So what I did is I created a batch file. Okay. The batch file is basically going to run SQL setup together with some parameters. I'm going to do an action install a SQL database instance, default instance name, and then I'm going to create a database and send some messages out. Okay? So what I'm doing here, I'm not going to save this. I'm now going to run my installation script. Okay? And that installation script is called install SQL. Okay. Hello, tagged attendees. This is the time in Seattle. This is the time my wife is going to realize I took the coffee maker on a flight with me. And my installation is starting. Now, with the install option, I have a couple of things that I can do. I can say, hey, my installation is running, and I want to see verbose logging and specify show interaction, okay, with the process that is currently running. And you will see a set of status messaging and installation components and checks running by. Now, the nice thing about SQL Server 2012 installation, it really checks for everything. It checks, do you have the right version of a .NET framework installed? If it's not installed, we'll install it for you. Okay? It checks on all those prerequisites, enables them, and has them running. Now, what I can see here is that I can start Task Manager, put that next to it, okay? And I can see that I am installing SQL Server, process is currently running. I started it at 10:25 Seattle time, so that means I need to get going, I need to get that installation done, okay? In the meantime, I know it's coming, okay? It's coming. These guys are waiting for coffee. That's how I got them into the session.
Wrong okay?
So going back to number 5 here, that's installing, going back to, what's that number? Number 4, okay? My coffee, as you can see, is still running, dripping. It's not even on 3 to 4 cups, not even. Okay, I'm making 12 cups of coffee. That's why I handed out some cups of coffee in case you wanted coffee. Okay, so that's running. We're doing that installer. Now, what's going to happen when that installation is done? You need to start managing it. How are you going to manage it? What are the capabilities do you have to manage a SQL Server on Windows Server Core? A couple of things. You can manage them using PowerShell, or you can actually manage them using SQL Server Management Studio from a different machine. Now, that is key and that is important in that installation process, because what you need to do is you're sitting at a command prompt, you're running a server core installation, and you need to make sure you have the TCP/IP protocol enabled, otherwise you would not be able to connect to that instance after you're done with setup. Okay? You could connect SQL Management Studio to a remote installation, but there's nothing you can actually do to run Configuration Manager and run that remotely onto that server core installation. Because if you remote desktop into this machine, what are you going to get? You're going to get exactly a server core installation. I'm getting very nervous here because my installation is not completed yet, right? Okay, there we go. Look at this. My installation was running. I'm going to switch to that machine here, okay? It says, not sure what you're waiting on, but we're also installing a user database. I installed a database called 4CoffeeDB. I inserted some data, and I get a message, no coffee yet, and I was done at 10:28. Less than 3 minutes, I have a full running SQL Server instance, okay? Come on, that's an applause. That's like right there, SQL installed, okay? Now that we're done with that installation, of course, we're going to manage it. And I said I could manage it with PowerShell, or I can manage it using Management Studio like any other thing. For that part, Thomas, can you run me a demo? And what I'll do is, after you're done, you might get a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Okay?
You haven't had enough coffee yet?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
You never got me coffee this morning anyway, so go ahead.
Okay. So when I first heard about Server Core, and I heard about no GUI, no applications, all this just raw command line stuff, my first fear was that I was going to have to do a lot of stuff from the command line using PowerShell. Similar to this. Let me show you a quick script here. So what I have is I have a handful of scripts here. So if I wanted to get like a list of databases, you can see what this code's doing. It's just doing some little SMO, comes back with a list of databases, and I could run that right from here. So let's see, never type in a demo. And, oops. Start over.
Mm-hmm. Looks like you needed more coffee.
I do. It's in scripts, right? P.S. Well, as soon as I hit tab, I knew there was an issue. So my first thought was this was going to be my life as a DBA. I was going to end up being in PowerShell a lot. But as Dandy pointed out, what I can do is I can still manage the instance. All I have to do is simply connect to it, because it's an instance just like any other instance. So I'm here on a box called SQL 1, and I can connect to the instance that he just installed, which is called SQL Core. And once I connect, I see just like I would any other instance. I don't need to have the tools installed on that box itself in order to actually manage that box. Many of us probably administer boxes remotely anyway, so the whole idea of just having this instance just running as a service by itself and being able to connect through Management Studio is probably the way you should be managing it anyway. So you installed a couple of databases as well.
Yeah, that's all part of my installation. So.
Yeah, and I can still manage this. You know, you've already seen, I can still manage this just like any other let me run this one. I can still use my PowerShell if I wanted to do things like backup databases. So if you already have a bunch of scripts that you're using in PowerShell, that stuff's going to work as well. Let's see. Is this one?
Yeah.
It's running?
Should be.
Okay. Should be running. So I can do anything that I've already automated and been using PowerShell for. If you're going to start using Server Core, you can just, those scripts just roll in. Anything you've been familiar with that you already have automated. In this case, you can see it. We're just backing up a database. Using a backup SQL database commandlet.
Can you show us that script real quick?
Oh, sure. Okay. Sure.
How many of you used scripting with SQL before? Okay. Sure. So, if you think about one of our MVPs, Alan White, being very, very well-established MVP, there's a lot of PowerShell scripting. With SQL 2008 and previous versions of SQL Server, the way you had to do that was using SQL Server Management Objects. Now, one of the key things that we invested in within PowerShell and SQL 2012 is we have a full management library. So rather than going in with SQL Management Objects, you can now go in with really dedicated PowerShell commandlets for backup purposes, for invoking SQL commands, sending queries. And so the one that we're showing here is a nice one that you could really use and scale and run with Afterburst, because what I'm basically saying is I want to take a backup of every user database, and the file name of my backup needs to be the name of the database and the date stamp associated with it. Okay? And then you could specify all those options with it. So something that was much more complex writing it with SMO is now something you could easily do using PowerShell.
Absolutely. Okay. And I can administer the instance as well. You can see, so for example, when you install this, what did you give me for authentication? I bet you gave me Windows, didn't you? So Windows authentication mode, I can do things just like I normally would. Let's type this again. Oops. My fingers get ahead of me.
Coffee's coming. Don't worry about it.
Okay. P.S. Let's see. What was it? Change. There it is. And so I can change it real quick and manage the instance just like I would any other way. If I could use PowerShell or I could use Management Studio, and I end up making those changes on the fly. Automated, very fast. So if you have a lot of servers that you need to administer and you need to go through with these scripts, you can be done in either way.
So and that is key, right? You can actually first find out, hey, what's my authentication mode? Is it set to mixed? Is it set to SQL only? And then you could easily change them, even restart the service using PowerShell, remote PowerShell, and then get things going.
Okay? Absolutely.
Tomorrow, Aaron Nelson is going to do a session dedicated and specific on that. There's also a lot of new stuff that we put into Management Studio, and you were going to show us some of that as well, right?
Sure. So one of the things that I came across just the other day, yesterday during my pre-con, was something I really liked, and I'll show you what that is real quick. So has anybody here heard of Zoomit? Yeah? No? Yes, you've heard of Zoomit. Okay.
I know a lot of speakers who don't. But.
So, yeah. So let me just run a query against a SysUser. So who here is a big fan of IntelliSense? Yeah? Everybody really likes IntelliSense. Dandy, did you put that in the product?
Did it really work for you in 2008 and 2008 R2?
Well,
okay, I see heads going yes, and I see heads going no. So one of the things that was different is when you select it from a table and you do like select star from sys.ta, you actually needed to know that that table dynamic management view started with TA, otherwise you wouldn't get it, okay? So one of the, I mean, it's just a minor change, but if you actually do that in 2012 Management Studio, you will see that you get that IntelliSense to work no matter where that's sitting.
Now, can everybody see that? No? So down here in the lower left, real quick, how's that? A little bit better? Let's make it 400. So I don't know if somebody's trying to put Zoomit out of business or what, but to me, yesterday during my pre-con, I had forgotten to start Zoomit, but I found that in this lower left, and it made things a lot easier for me just like that. So another thing I came across as well, which Dandy pointed out to me just yesterday, was the fact that we now have snippets. If you are a fan of, say, IntelliSense, I have over here these snippets that, real quick, allowed me to come up with the create. So if you know what the templates are, instead of having that template explorer, now you just right-click, insert snippet, and you see that little drop-down of commands, function, table. I chose table. I can create myself a little sample table. Again, I'm connected to that core. We'll just call that column one, column two. And now I'll go out, and you'll see that I'll have that user table right there. So Management Studio just allows a little bit more functionality these days in the SQL 2012 Management Studio tools, and it's made things just a lot better for me, even administering instances 2008 and down.
Perfect.
Yep. Okay.
What else we got?
Coffee's almost
done.
You
hear that sound? We almost got coffee. This is perfect timing. Yeah. Want to grab some coffee?
Absolutely.
Put the can back under because there's a little spring and it jumped out when I was...
It's not quite done yet. I don't
okay.
want to let
Let's just out. Wait for it then.
I think OSHA is not going to be happy okay. with the coffee maker next to all the wires.
That's why we have high availability and failover capabilities with SQL 2012, right? Okay. I mean, come on now. Let's have a look at those, for example. Okay. So we talked about high availability, and one of the things that you need to think about when you think about always on is, what is the advantage that always-on features could bring me in many aspects, not only for application failover, but how can I take advantage and gain performance using an always-on application? Luis Vargas this morning was showing a demo on how to use those multiple secondaries. What I have here is a Windows Phone-based application, literally, and my wife likes shopping. I like shopping too. And so she wanted to go buy some furniture, but every time she buys furniture, it's like the furniture looks old, and if you put like one of these nice flat screen TVs on it, it doesn't look right. So I actually went hunting for a very old traditional 20-inch CRT TV that I'm gonna buy with my phone right now. Now, what I see here is for debugging purposes, it says the order is placed by a server called SQL 3, okay? SQL 3 is not where my application is connecting to. My application is connecting to that listener that we configured as part of OpenZone, okay? And then it's gonna redirect that to the primary server, which of course at this point is gonna be SQL 3. So if I deep dive into that, what I can actually do is I can connect Object Explorer. Did you have coffee?
Not here.
You just couldn't wait, is it?
Mine.
That's yours.
Okay.
Let me know if it's too strong for you. So I'm connecting to this virtual network name. Okay, I can see the status of my databases that are now part of a single always-on availability group, and I can see they're both running a synchronized status. Okay, they're part of the same availability group. If I look on that availability group here, production availability group, I can also see what are my replicas and what is the current status. We walk through that in the foundational session. You could set up properties. You can do whatever you want with it, okay? You could change the failover time. You could specify whether it's a read intent only or a readable secondary. And even more is you could go to those availability databases, okay, and actually add a database to an existing availability group, okay? We'll have a look at that in a minute as well. So then I can look at my listener as well, and here I did have the dashboard. Now, we all know things on stage might go wrong when situations go bad, and for example, Tom would be spilling coffee, okay? Right here at the bottom, I can't get there. It's too short, okay? So I actually have that server SQL 3 that was sitting here, okay? And I just pulled it.
I'm sure I'll be fine.
Okay, let's have a look on what happens here. Okay, I'm gonna refresh my dashboard. Okay, so first of all, I'm gonna refresh here in Management Studio and see what happens. Okay, see my available replicas, SQL 3 is down. Now, when I put that dashboard here, okay, and I don't know why that's not refreshing, okay, I will see the health status that should come up and say, hey, I've got a critical error, okay? Sorry for the delay there. It was like thinking about coffee as well. So I can see that one currently failed. Now, the transparency you want to get with application, of course, at that point is you want to have automatic failover. So I'm going to go back here, okay, and I'm going to purchase another. I didn't leave my application, as you noticed. And I'm going to purchase another TV that is now processed by SQL 4. Okay? Hey, that's just automatic failover. Did you realize how simple that was? Instantly, I had automatic failover. Come on. That's worth an applause as well, right? Okay. Now, read-only applications. Okay? What Ricardo showed up, again, Luis Vargas showed you this morning. Why do I keep saying Ricardo? Because he's on your team. I can integrate that and look at some of my reporting and process an order report, and that order report is going to come up. It might take a while before it comes up, okay? I can make that report being connected to one of my readable secondaries, and I will see that report will process, and I can still retrieve that data, okay? And it's not coming up. It's taking a while here, so we're just going to give it a minute to think and actually load, okay? Now, one of the other things we can do is we can actually speed up the processing of our reporting and speed up the processing of the querying as well. Okay? And that's what we do with X-Velocity Column Store Index. So as you can see here is I changed my name to John Yang because otherwise my wife is going to keep buying new furniture every time I order a TV online. So what I can do here is I can look at another report, okay? Using SQL reporting services, that's going to show me the sales form, in this case, Contoso Electronics, which is running their sales report. And the report takes a while, Okay? Now, is this acceptable performance? The question is, it depends, right? How many records am I processing, and how long does it take me to get that actually query result, get that back? So this report runs in 15 seconds. Okay? I'm going to optimize this report using X-velocity column store indexing by creating a column store index and see how much faster my report will run at that point. And so from a usability perspective, what I'm going to do is I'm going to connect to the database engine that I have on SQL BI. PowerPivot. See, I can't type either. I'm just doing this purposely, by the way. He's not paying attention. I'm connecting to that instance. I look at my databases, and I can see my Contoso retail data warehouse. I'm going to zoom in on that in just a minute, okay? And I have a table that is called facts online sales. I'm going to look at the properties and look at the storage of that, okay? Now, I am running a table that has 12 million records, and I'm using that with a join in order to get all of my report data and create that report that I have with that SharePoint integration, okay? The fact that that runs 15 seconds on my laptop, I think, is a quite performance situation already, but I can make it even faster. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a column store index on top of that, okay? And look at the table's indexes. I see I have a primary key. What I'm going to do next is right-click on that one, say new index, say non-clustered column store index. By the way, the full drill down on this and optimizing for column store, Eric Hansen has a session on that later this week. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab all these columns and create an index. Now, how many of you use Excel? I see. I think there's more people. Put all these hands up if you use Excel. It's totally okay. Okay? I know we're in a database session. We like Excel, especially Sean does because he's a BI guy. Okay? Now, in Excel, we have the concept of working with columns and doing aggregations on those columns. Right? You're going to put your summary and your counts at the bottom of those columns. What we do with SQL is we store things based on rows, and then we need to start querying. So if we actually want to do those aggregations, wouldn't it be better if we could use the same concept and store everything in a columnar way and then do our aggregations on it? Okay? That's exactly what we do with column store indexing. So while that index was being created, what I'm actually doing is grabbing all those rows, taking all those columns, pivot them, and put an index on it, and on top of that, enable compression. Okay? Compression is good. You're going to see that in some of the session rooms this week. Okay? You would have to compress in order to all fit in. My index is created. Okay. I am going to switch back to my report application here, and I'm going to refresh. Okay? I'm going to run exactly that same report. Okay? And here's my query performance. It came back in 0.48 seconds. This is what we call blazing fast performance. Okay? That's exactly what Quinton talked about in the session when customers gains performance increase of up to 400. You see how easy it was to implement that? Now, this was uncached, right? It actually might run faster now if I hit this again, okay? Because now not only am I using the column store index, I am actually now hitting the cache because that index is loaded in memory, okay? So I get from something over 15 seconds to 0.22 seconds, okay? Which is amazing. Now, some of the advantages, put the features together, always on availability groups, combine those with the fact that you could do column store indexing and put that on an offload for reporting purposes, is definitely going to make your entire BI story much easier as well. So what I can do is actually the same technology that we have within column store are technologies that you can take advantage from when you're actually working with your BI solutions. And I'm pretty sure that in this room, there are people that are going to be interested in the BI components to that as well. Now, when it comes to reporting, one of the features we released with SQL Server 2012 is PowerView. And I'm very fortunate to actually have Sean here with me because he's the program manager for PowerView on reporting services. So Sean, you want to show us some PowerView there?
Sure, absolutely. So once again, my name is Sean Boone. I'm a program manager on the SQL Server reporting services team. Let's see, let's go over here and switch over really quick.
Let me pour.
Now, for starters, PowerView is a ad hoc, interactive query and visualization experience. And I'm going to jump over here in just a minute, but I want to show you where it would start typically. Now, over here, I've got my Power Pivot gallery, and in many cases, all I would have to do is I've got a Power Pivot report here. I have a Power Pivot workbook, and if I scroll down here, I actually have the workbook right here. I could launch and create a PowerView port right from here. But I've already got it up and running. I'm right here. I'm in the browser. And before we get started, I just want to say a couple quick things here. The thing that I'd like you to take away about PowerView is four things. One, that it's simple. Second, that it's smart. Three, that it's familiar. And lastly, that it's fun. And hopefully we're going to see all of that sort of intertwined as we work through the demo here. So here I am, and when I said familiar, we're right here inside PowerView, and you'll notice that it has a very office look and feel. So again, that's about being familiar. Up here at the top, I've got a ribbon. And over here on the right, I've got what looks very familiar in terms of like a pivot table field list. You can kind of imagine that. Well, actually, I'm actually using Zoomit. Here we go. Go back out.
Because you're not in Management Studio.
So you can see it. And I'm going to start with a very simple scenario. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to create a sales table, create a title right here. And I'm going to go to the product dimension, grab the product name. And then I'm going to go to the sales table. Sure, I'm not connected here sometimes. There we go. Do that. And we'll look at February 2. Whoa, I did not do that.
That's someone standing back on the wall there, getting the light. Someone that needs
returns,
coffee. We got more coffee. If someone
sales,
wants coffee, feel free to come up.
Right. And so everything in PowerView here starts as a table. And I can just sort of scroll this data, right, keep scrolling it, right? And we're actually paging the data. We're virtualizing, bringing the data back. So you don't actually have to have, you know, the 12 million records that Dandy showed come back all at once. So we're doing some smart things there to ensure that we don't bring all the data back at once. Now I'm going to turn this into a matrix. All right.
I got a question there, Sean.
Go ahead.
What you're actually showing is you're processing that on actual data, right? It's not like with reporting services where you need to hit preview to actually see the reports.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, Okay. Yes. So as you're designing the report, you're actually seeing all of the data, right? So we're working against the in-memory instance of analysis services running in SharePoint here with that Power Pivot workbook. I just grabbed product category name. It's going to bring it over here real quick. Hopefully. Much quicker. There we go. All right, so you can see that I've got all the audio. It's a little bit tight here with the screen resolution that we've got. I'll try to zoom in here. You can see audio and then all the audio products next to it. And let's say I want to slice this by different product categories. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add another field to the canvas here, the product image. I'm just going to drag it out. Right, and I've got some images that I've tagged in the model, some of the ones you saw from Dandy's phone application there. And I'm going to turn that into a slicer. And then I can just, you know, for example, if I'm interested in computers, I can just click on computers, and it filters the result set. And I can scroll it. And I can do other things like sort it. So if I want to sort by sales, I just click on the column header, and I'm able to quickly sort on that data. It's taking a little bit longer than usual here. Come on. All right, there we go. Ascending, and there you go, descending, just like that, fairly quickly. All right, so that's a table. Now, we've got this filter pane out here, so if I want to do some additional filtering on this data, I can work with that. You'll see that it has two areas here. One is the view, which is the whole view that's there, and then the second is just for the matrix itself. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just say I want the big product, so I'll just drop this down, and we've got a nice slider here that lets you filter the data. And I can just get to the big products, just like that. And then we also have some date filters as well. So if I'm interested in just a particular range, even though I don't have date in the actual visual itself, I can go and grab the date key, drag it out here, go to this back of the card here, and then you get a nice calendar control that would allow you to go ahead and filter that data just by the date that's there. So those are tables. Now I'm going to jump over to another view and start working with charts. Click. So I'm just going to go ahead and hit create a new view. It's all in the same report. I'm going to go ahead and collapse that because I don't need that for the moment. And we're going to start looking at some of the charting capabilities that we have here. So the first thing I'm going to look at is product category and sales. And I'm going to turn this into a chart. Now notice in doing all of that, I didn't actually have to go down to the field well here and work with the data and change anything. It just automatically did the right thing. It put the categories on the axis, it put the sales numbers on the rows, and it's very straightforward to do. And then I want to add subcategories right below it. So I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste this chart. All right, see how easy that was to do? And I'm going to grab subcategory. There we go. Oh, there we go. Just a second. All right, so these are all my subcategories across all of the product categories. Now, when we talked about smart, I want to show you some of the highlighting features that we've put in the product. And you'll notice that I don't have to do anything to set these up. They just work because of how the model has been set up in advance. So for example, if I click on home appliances, right, it automatically highlights all of the subcategories that are home appliances. I didn't have to do anything to set that up. Likewise, if I click on washers and dryers, it partially highlights the bar above so that you can see the contribution that's there. So that's one way that that works. But we can do even more here. I'm now going to switch over to look at this by time. So instead of looking at this by product subcategory, I'm going to look at this by time. So I'm going to go to my date dimension. I've got a field that represents the year and the quarters. All right. And again, all the highlighting is built in, so I can sort of see the contributions there as it works. But maybe I'm interested in the product ratio, the ratios of the sales. And so I'm going to grab a different measure here, and you're going to see a slightly different capability. So I'm going to grab this ratio all products, drag it into the field well. Oh, wrong one. There we go. Get rid of sales. All right. Now, ratios are percentages. And so they're not going to be additive as I look across time. And maybe I'm interested in comparing how these did by different quarters. And so this time when we actually highlight, we get a different behavior. There we go. Right? So some of the bars got thinner and grew. And then I can sort of see, as a result, which ones are bigger, which ones are smaller. I can go across and pick different months, different quarters, right? And I can actually make those comparisons looking at the products. All right, so let's create another view. And in fact, just really quickly, I'll show you product subcategories again. If I add subcategories, let's add that to the chart here. All right. And again, when I click on home appliances, It's actually going to go through and highlight in the bottom chart all of the home appliances occurrences. So again, I didn't have to do anything to set that up. All of that just works because of the model. And if I want to blow this out and see a slightly bigger view, I can just pop this out and I can work with it there. Let's see how those work. The legend's fully interactive, so if I want to look at Dandy's favorite coffee machines, I don't even know how well they register on here, but they're in here.
I've been buying more TVs than coffee makers.
So. There you go. So they're a fairly decent percentage of Contoso's revenue. All right. So that's one type of charting that we have. Create another view here. All right. And this time, I want to look at margins and sales. So again, I'm going to go to get the sales. Here they are. And I want to look at product subcategories again. And I'm going to turn this, let's see, and then let's grab margin percentage. We want to see which ones are actually doing well for the business here. So I'll go ahead and turn that into a scatter chart. And again, it's just one click away. So when we talk about simple and making it easy, notice that I didn't have to worry about where to put things. It just put things in the right place for me, right? So I'll go ahead and resize that a little bit. Let's turn on the labels. All right, so I can see that camcorders have they represent quite a bit of the business, and they have an average margin percentage of 55.9%. All right, and then lastly, what I want to do is I want to look at this over time. So I'm going to go back to the date dimension or date entity, and I'm going to click on calendar year and quarter. Actually, I'm going to put it on the play axis. I actually wanted product categories to be on color. So let me go there really quick. Product name, sorry. Product category, there we go. All right. And so because this was time, it automatically put it down on the play axis. And so that I can go ahead and play this visualization, and I can kind of see how things progress over time, right? And you'll notice several cases where sort of the sales expand and they contract and they expand back out. You could probably associate that with some holiday time as well. But I still have another variable that I can add here to represent time, or sorry, represent the size. So I'm going to go to the fax sales again, and grab the return, discount amount, right? Maybe we're selling a lot of things because certain things are being discounted more than others. So go ahead and click on that. And now the size of these bubbles gets reflected in that amount. And again, this is entirely interactive. I can click on home appliances and see all of them. I can play them through time. I can pause the visual. Undo that. But watch what happens to this particular entry of camcorders. It jumps out, right there. But you see a lot of discounts that go with it. And if you were to play this over and over again, you'd see it very quickly, right? And I can highlight that and see the trail associated with it and go ahead and play it through. And it just works, right? Now, lastly, when I'm done, I might want to share what I've got here. And to do that, what I do is I actually jump out to PowerPoint. And the way that I do that is just go right to the file menu here, and I've got this entry that says Export to PowerPoint. And so I've actually gone ahead and already done that. It takes a couple minutes to jump off. So here I've got my Contoso Electronics presentation. I'll go ahead and hit Next. There we go. And you'll notice that first, what I've got here is a static image inside the actual presentation, but I can click right here and say click to interact. There we go.
give it a moment. There we go. Collapse the filters. And now I have a fully interactive PowerPoint presentation, right? All of the filters that I would have set up on this on this view will come over, and you can work with them there. I can page down and go to the next slide. Doesn't want to cooperate for me for some reason here.
So I no longer need to copy-paste from, like, what I have in my report, put that in a PowerPoint. I can just have that live interaction directly within the PowerPoint.
Right in the PowerPoint. So I think with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Dandy.
So what happens if you interact with it in PowerPoint and hit that play button?
It does the same thing. It works. We'll go ahead and do that. And you can resize the visual that you have in here if you want to shrink it down a little bit. You can do that as well. It's just an object sitting inside PowerPoint. It has all those sort of behaviors that that come along with being just an object inside PowerPoint. Here we go. Give it a second. So, you know, I can filter this to just my stores, my resellers if I want to, right? And again, I can play this through. So, you know, if somebody gives me a question during a presentation and says, well, you know, let's just remove the resellers or let's just remove the stores, I can just go ahead and do that on the fly right there in PowerPoint.
Do you have anything on cell phones in there?
I do have stuff on cell phones in there. Why do you ask?
Okay.
There you go.
Because I look at the reporting and some of the tagging and the numbers don't seem to match.
Oh.
That's the first thing that happens if you walk into an exec meeting, right? Are those the right numbers? There's something wrong in there. Okay?
There you go.
And that's something wrong in there. This is going to be very important, too. That's going to take us into data quality services. So I want to look a bit more and much more into data quality and what we're doing, what the enhancements are, and how we integrate that. So one of the things I noticed there is there has to be something wrong with my data categorization. I mean, some of the products that we're selling are, in my opinion, tagged to the wrong category. So what I can do is I can actually go into Excel and look at my Contoso retail products, which is my product categorization. And so what I'm doing there is I'm using the master data services snap-in for Excel, and I can actually look at my product categorization. And so one of the things I see here is I have my product category, smartphones and PDAs. There's some wrong tagging in my product model. I tagged that to a product category called computers, and that's why my metrics seem to be off, okay? There was something wrong with the numbers there. I realized that. So what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to say with master data services, I'm going to tag that to personal electronics because they don't belong in computers. They're personal electronics, to have them rolling up to the right category. So what I can do at that point is then go to master data, connect to my master data server, okay? So I can explore the data entity model that I exposed using master data services, and then I can republish that, okay? Now, we all know that building out your own repository and building out your own categorization of data is tough, but what if you have to deal with organizations that will send you that product catalog and you just know that whatever they send you is going to be wrong and you need to make adjustments? One of the things you could do there is you could implement data quality services and then actually check the source data. Now, data quality services actually comes with a client application, and you could actually scrub the data within Excel and do automatic connections, set up a knowledge base. And so if something comes in as one of the wrong categorizations or a wrong data type in a source file, I can actually modify that. I can actually say that everything that comes in inches, well, they tagged it in inches, but it should be tagged in centimeters, whatever. I could do those kind of tagging. So that integration part really allows you to combine a good system for data quality services and master data management. And the way we do that is with SQL integration services. So within SSIS, what I can actually do is I could say, hey, you know what? I get a new product catalog. By the way, this is the SSIS Designer integrated in SQL Server Data Tools, Visual Studio. So you get the full functionality there. One of the things that we changed that if you haven't seen SSIS before, we actually changed those categories. They look nicer. They're much better to design. If you can't see it, I have that same zoom thing in there that allows me to zoom in. Okay? If I look at the control flow of my package, what I want to do is I want to load data that I get from a supplier load that categorization into master data services. Then I want to update my Contoso retail model and have the right tagging on those subcategories. I'm going to then do my product updates, and then I'm going to process that BI semantic model that Sean needed in order to do his Power View reporting on it. Okay? So if I look into this product category tagging, one of the things that I see here is I have a product catalog that I get from a distributor. Okay? And I can actually look at the source of that. Okay? I'll actually show you that file. It's a text file. It's got some columns in there. Okay? And one of the things I see here is I see different kinds of weight unit measurements. Okay? You see I have weights and pounds and everything. I don't like that. I want that to be categorized automatically, always to the same category, and learn from it. Every time something comes in, I get the right tagging there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to process this by a data quality services knowledge base in which I defined this is how my data needs to be categorized and tagged. So looking at DQS, okay, I'm going to connect to a DQS knowledge base that I published that is called, in my example here, unit of measures. Okay, and in those unit of measures, I have something that is called weight, and I have something that is called size. Now look at the mapping here. Okay. What I'm actually saying, if I get something from a source that comes in as a domain as defined as size, I'm going to map that as an output alias and map that differently. Now, the nice thing here is that what I can do is I can look at what we call a derived column here. So I get an input and output. What is my source? What is my outcome after I did the data cleansing? So what I can do here is I can enable a data viewers to actually show you what happens there. So looking at my control flow, I get data. I know it's dirty data. I'm going to clean it up, okay? And then I'm going to hit run on this SSIS package. There's a session that Matthew Roach and Matt Mason will be doing on this entire integration, really drilling down into the bits of it. So what I see here is I have my data sitting there, okay? So I look at my source product categories. I have all those products in there, okay? And I see that I have units that are coming in into grams and pounds and LB. And so my outcome of that is I'm actually going to say here that my size of measure from my source, I can actually look here and say, hey, see, I have a record corrected status. I moved that over to inches. I moved that over to pounds. I moved that over to centimeters, okay? So I can see what records I cleaned, and part of that knowledge base picked them up. Now, this is my data viewer that is part of SSIS. It was in 2008 or 2 as well. So I can now just continue the package of execution here, okay? So that SSIS package is executing, okay? It did the data cleaning. It calculated the derived column, and then it put that into my MDS destination. Now, if I go back to my control flow, one of the things you see here is we're no longer using that green and red when things fail. We're actually putting you a nice check mark there that says whether or not it failed or executed successfully. There's much more to SQL Server integration services there that you really want to look into in terms of the way we deploy packages, the way we work with configurations and so on. It really is nice to work with SSIS on that part, and it's all integrated with SQL Server data tools. Okay? Now, we talked a little bit about SQL Server data tools, and I go, well, wait a minute. This Contoso application, is that really workable in the environment that I'm currently living in? I'm doing orders on a cell phone. It gets processed by a server. I have failover capabilities. Wouldn't it be nicer that I deploy that to a SQL database running on Windows Azure? Okay? So what I can do is I can actually refactor my existing database into a SQL Server data tools project and then take that and publish that to an Azure database. Okay? And the way that works is quite interesting. Okay? So where are my developers in the room? If you haven't seen this, you're going to be very excited about this functionality. I'm going to start SQL Server data tools. Okay? And one of the things you see there is that I do have a SQL Server Object Explorer within the data tools. I don't need to switch between Management Studio and my SSDT tool or Business Intelligence Development Studio in 2008. I can actually browse my server, okay, look at my databases. I can add a SQL server, okay, whether that's a local server or whether that's sitting in the cloud. Okay, I could just add that, pick that up, and then browse it. Now, as I look at this database, okay, I'm actually going to say, hey, this Contoso sales database that I have, rather than having that running on-premise, I want to run that or prepare that to run that off-premise. Okay, so what I can do here is from my Explorer, I could say, give me a new project. So what I'm going to do is a new SSDT project. Okay. So I just take that, create new project. I'm going to give it a name, okay? And so what it will do is it will take that database and totally pull that in to my SSDT project. And then I could take that and work with it offline. I could use it offline and work with it. So my target project is going to be Contoso SalesDB, okay? I'm going to create a solution. I could specify, import my database settings, references, permissions. So it really refactors that entire database and pulls that all in. Okay? I want to override the existing project. Sure. Okay? So it's going to import that entire schema, pull that in there. And quite honestly, even as a DBA, I don't see any reason anymore why I would generate scripts outside of SQL. Because one of the things you're going to notice here, if you look in that project that I just created, I can look at my Solution Explorer, and you'll see that everything is just created for me automatically. Okay? So it grabbed the definition of every stored procedure, every view that I have within that database, and I just put it out there, and I could work with that. Now, what else it did, if I look in that SQL Server Object Explorer, it actually installed a SQL Server LocalDB, okay, which is new. It's an updated SQL Express. And so what I do there is I put everything into a local database, and I can then decide whether I want to deploy that to a destination server, whether I want to do schema comparisons, and so on. So there's really a lot of added value just on this. If I look into the definition of a table, I can look at the table definition here, and I can look at some of these properties, okay? Or I could say, hey, you know what? I'm going to create a new item. That new item is anything you can even think about as a DBA, but also anything you can even think about as a developer, okay? So I can say I have a new SQL Server. Let's take a file group or a file table or an index whatsoever. You could go through the entire list, okay? And I can even say, oh, I have a new table, okay? Now, even though I'm a certified master on SQL, it doesn't necessarily mean that I know how to write a create table statement. So I'm going to use the graphical designer to do so, okay? So I'm going to say here that I have my column data. I'm going to specify the data type, okay? And I'm going to save this table. I can rename it afterwards, okay? But I can also see, hey, wait a minute, I have my create table statement right there, okay? Call it table demo, okay? I have a primary key on it, so I can move it. I could go either way with this, okay? So I'm going to save this project. And then I could take that project and say, let me look at the properties of this, okay, and look at my target platform, okay? My target platform here, rather than it being SQL 2012, could be anything. It could be 2005, 2008, 2008 R2. So if I'm within my project using data types that are not supported in that previous edition of SQL Server, it will tell me, okay? If there's anything that is not supported, it will tell me and identify. So if I take this project and I were to deploy that to SQL Azure, okay, one of the other things I can do on that is I could do code analysis. Now, I absolutely like the top one here. Okay, avoid select stars and stored procedures views and table definitions. Actually, what I can do with that, if I have a select started to a view definition, it will flag it and it will tell me, hey, you have a select started. What do you want to do with it? Oh, that's easy. I'm going to right click and say refactor, and it's automatically going to add those columns to it for me. Okay? Now, what's even better, if you rename an object in your SSDT tool, and that object is used in a view definition, a stored procedure, or whatever, it will go out and change that into the definition. So as a DBA, you no longer need to go look with your dependency dynamic management views to figure out what the actual objects are that are affected. You can actually use the tools to get that done. Okay? So I said I want this project to be deployed to Azure. So what I can do now is I can start debugging, okay? And I do get an error message here that says add drop role member is not supported for the targeted platform, okay? Yep, that kind of makes sense. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out those security role mechanisms. I'm going to look at my errors here. It says the table dim customer does not have a clustered index. Clustered indexes are required for inserting data in this version of SQL, okay? So what I can do at that point is I can get this error, look at the dim customer table, okay? And I can see, oh, wait a minute, I don't have a clustered index on this. I was kind of wondering what that key thing here is, so I'm going to set this as a primary key, save it. So if I build this now, my entire project will build successfully for a deployment on a Windows Azure SQL database, okay? So this is nice. I mean, this is going to build, okay? I'm still going to get some warnings because I did code analysis. But my deployment succeeded, okay? What else I can do now is I have this project. One of the other things I want to do with this now is actually go to the project that I have here, okay? And I could specify that I want to do a schema compare. So I'm now going to compare this schema against a defined target. What is my offline changes that I have here compared to that SQL Contoso sales DB that I have sitting here, okay? And so what you're going to do there is you're going to go away, perform a schema analysis, and it will tell you what those changes are. It's actually now checking those two databases, trying to identify what those changes are specifically, and it will mark and flag those changes for me. Okay? So I'm going to do that comparison. It's going to tell me, hey, wait a minute, this object you have here in your development environment, you don't have that in production. Or this object that you have in your production environment is different than what you have in your dev code. Someone went in there and made some changes. So then you could see those schema comparisons, and you can actually see what needs to happen and whether or not you want to apply those changes. Okay? Now, nice about this is I have this project sitting here. I did a refactor from an existing database. Of course, I could start a new project from scratch. But what else I can do is I could say, you know what? I want to create a snapshot of this. So this is my demo snapshot that I have right now, okay? And what I will be able to do is I will be able to compare against temporary snapshots. Let's say every month I'm going to keep track of what my changes are in the databases. I could keep track of them and do a comparison and then reapply or merge the changes together. This is cool, isn't it? So what else we have now is I'm ready to actually take this, okay, and I'm going to publish this. I'm now going to say, rather than putting this onto, I shouldn't have hit my browse button there, but that's okay. It's going to take a while, okay? It's going to scan my network and see what's out there, if it comes back at all. Yeah, that's going to be very interesting if you run this at, okay? I'm isolated. My entire demo is running within the same network. So what I'm actually going to do here is I'm going to go to SQL Core, okay, using Windows authentication, test my connection, okay. It says the database does not exist. Okay, let's give it a try if I could deploy this to SQL Core. I could then say register this as a data tier application, okay? Because then I could take that and deploy that as a data tier application. Bob Boschman is doing a session specifically focusing on data tier applications at this event. So once that I'm done with this, I could say, you know what? I don't trust that. I know as a developer, my DBA is not going to trust me either. So what I'm going to do with this, I'm actually now going to say generate a script before I decide to publish. Okay? Or I could just say, you know what, start publishing this. And I hope my connectivity to SQL Core is up, because at that point, that database is now being deployed to SQL Server running on Server Core. So my preview was running. This is a little extra to my demo, so that I didn't check whether this would be working. So I will be very surprised to see the outcome of this. Okay? Completed successfully. Whew. See, that's what coffee does to you. So far, SQL Server data tools. Now, we talked about how easy it is to get certain things deployed and get certain things managed. Those always-on availability groups. I think by now, we gave you more than 12 reasons to really adore, embrace, and love SQL Server 2012. And we're not done yet. We've got about 8 minutes left, and we're going to use those to the max. Okay? So let's have a look here. Some of you went to the foundational session. Okay? If you didn't, you could still review the recording. I have an application, and that application, in my case, is sitting and connecting to a data source that sits on SQL 4. Okay? It's not highly available yet. It's just an application that I want to make highly available. Okay? So what I'm going to do with that is I'm actually going to show you the application. And if you were in that session, okay, I am currently using the same application as what Luis Vargas used in his demo earlier today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert some records, okay? So I have an active load that is running. I'm going to stop this, okay? I can actually look at the connection string, and what I see is I am now connected to SQL 4, okay? I want to do something extra here. What do you want me to do? You want me to add it to the existing availability group or create a new one? Create a new one. Okay, let's create a new one. So what I'm going to do is, so I am on SQL 1. What I'm going to do is I'm going to connect my database engine to SQL 4. Okay. So on SQL 4, I see that SQL 4 is already part of a production availability group, but you wanted me to create a new one, so let's go create a new one. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go onto the always-on availability group and talk that wizard that we briefly mentioned, okay, to set up a new availability group. Okay? I need to specify the name, connect the databases, specify my listener eventually. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to name this and call this TAGET availability group. Very original. Oops. Hit next. It's going to check the databases that are currently residing on SQL 4 that would qualify for an always-on availability group. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say, hey, this always-on LabDB meets the prerequisites. I'm going to specify what are going to be my replicas. So I'm going to say that SQL 3 is a replica. By the way, you saw me ducking under the table. I was actually restarting that SQL Server 3 that I totally yanked and killed when I pulled it. I'm going to also add another replica called SQL 5. Okay. What I'm going to say is between SQL 4 and SQL 3, I want automatic failover. And I want those databases, why not, to be readable secondaries. So in the session this morning, Luis Vargas showed you the read intent only option that I have here. And the read intent only really needs to be specified in the application connection string that the application is read intent only. Otherwise, if you don't specify, well, if you just say readable secondary, the application doesn't need to specify, and you could just read it with SQL Management Studio and whatsoever. Okay? So I'm going to add, I've got my replicas. Basically, it creates my endpoints. I could specify the backup references, and this is really cool, okay? You could take always on can optimize your backup strategy. You could say, I want to backup from a secondary database rather than my primary one. Okay? Offload that workload. So I have some default settings there. I can now specify what's going to be my listener. I can always add one later. So I'm going to call this AG demo, specify a port number. But bear in mind that you could also use DHCP there. Okay? So what's going to happen is as soon as I configure this listener, it's going to register with DNS, and it's going to be well aware of what that listener and where it's currently running. I'm going to give that an IP address, 192.168.1.223, just to pick a number. Okay. That's the amount of evals I hope to get back at the end of the session. So it's going to ask me, well, you want to do your initial data synchronization. What it does, it takes a backup of your database, restores that backup on each of the replicas, and it does that all automated. Okay, you don't need to do that manually, setting up that always-on availability group. Okay, not a best practices, but I'm doing this for demo purposes. So what I'm going to do is hit next. It's going to check my group validation. Hit next. I can script it out and specify that I script this out to a query window. I can then save it, or I can hit finish. So what's going to happen at this stage is my always-on availability group is going to be created. Automatically, SQL 4 is going to be marked as the primary. SQL 3 is going to be a secondary. SQL 5 is a secondary as well, but it's asynchronous. And each of those will be readable. So I can redirect applications and point applications out to be part of that one. Okay? So my wizard is done. So that means that now I can actually take this application, look at my availability group here that I have, and see that I just created my availability group ticket. Okay? That's what you guys wanted. That's what you asked for. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to go back into that application. Okay? So rather than having that application being connected to SQL 4, I am now going to say, stop doing that. You are going to connect to... to what? AG demo, okay? So what was it, AG demo, that I named it? Let's have a look. Okay? It still says it's connected to SQL 4 because that's my primary, but what's going to happen right now is my load is going to be running. Okay? Now we got 1 minute left, which means we need to start wrapping up, right? So same thing, I'm going to start wrapping up. I'm going to bring SQL 3 down. And that's the wrong thing. I had to bring SQL 4 down. Okay. Oops. I had to bring SQL 4 down. Let's plug this back in. Okay. See, that's what not enough coffee does to you. So my load is running. It's connected to SQL 4. Let's have a look what happens on my dashboard here. Okay. Show the dashboard. Okay. This will, of course, now fail because SQL 3, I just killed it again. Okay. My transactions will just continue to run. Okay, but as SQL 3 will become available, it will catch up as part of that. Okay. With that, I do want to thank you for the session. Don't leave yet because we're going to go back to this presentation. And I want to talk about some of the other things that you have going on. In every single slide deck that you download, you're going to see this track resources slide. The reason I know it's in every slide is because I put it in every slide myself. There's an entire set of hands-on labs that we do have available. So if you don't make it to the hands-on labs area here, you can always take those online with a very minimal configuration. If you have a machine, 4 gigs of RAM whatsoever, you connect to a hosted platform very similar to the entire configuration that we have running here, but it's hosted out of one of our data centers. Okay? Everything that we showed you is part of the hands-on labs, is part of our integrated demo, so you could really get your hands on specifically on that. Also keep in mind that Microsoft Learning is announcing their certifications at this event, SQL 2012 certification. To give you some background on that, in 2000, I went to my first DAGET as an attendee. I think it's because of my SQL Server certification that I actually ended up working for Microsoft, and then on top of that, running the database track at an event like this. And I really hope you get a very good week with a lot of sessions, good quality demos, and things like that. So with that, make sure you complete the eval. Come and visit us tonight. There's the reception at the expo hall. Tomorrow evening is the community night where they actually sit down with the presenters at a table. There's going to be pizzas and drinks and beer and food. Okay? And if there's any more questions, we gladly take those outside so we can make the room available for the next presenter. Thank you.